grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 273 of the Dudes and Beer podcast, now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you're a fan of podcasting like I am, want to start up a podcast for yourself, friends, family, school, business, whatever, stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. That is all they do, is help people with podcasts. Everything from branding to personal consultation, one-on-one consultation is what they provide. They will go through, give you a podcast audit. If you have a show that you're trying to start, they will help you brand it. They'll help you figure out distribution. Anything you have a question for, they have a professional in the field to give you an answer one-on-one. Stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. Use the code DUDES20. For 20% off of your entire purchase. While you were online tonight, make sure to stop on by dudesandbeer.com. That is where you can find all of the documents that we'll be talking about. Our, of course, our promo episode post on the website has all the links to the articles, things like that. Our knowledge vault for years. One of the first documents that we had in the Knowledge Vault was the 500-page tome of the 300 patents of Nikola Tesla. Go ahead and open that up, folks, because it'll take a minute. But our guest tonight is Tim Eaton. Tim Eaton is has a long, illustrious career in special effects, but also is literally a board member at large and head of media for the Tesla Science Foundation. Let's hear, before we start with him, some of the only recorded words from Nikola Tesla.
Electric power is everywhere present in unlimited quantities. I can drive the world's machinery without the need of coal, oil, gas, or any other fuel. This new power for the driving of the world's machinery will be derived from the energy which operates the universe, the cosmic energy.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Tim Eaton. Tim, how are you today?
I'm very well. Great to be on. Thanks.
Absolutely. Nikola Tesla, in my heart of hearts, is probably one of the most kindred spirits in the world to me. I myself am a circuit designer. Love tinkering with circuits. I have a Tesla coil kit on the way as we speak that I ordered about a month ago. And I can't wait to start playing around with it, start dealing with it. And to know that this technology has been out there since the turn of the century is just phenomenal. To know that the documents that we're showing tonight, the patents that are there, have been around that long. Most people do not realize that everything from what generates our power to what gets it down the line to what is out here dealing with your power, most of it was patented by Nikola Tesla. And for that to just be a fact, to know that there is one guy that was out there producing all of this science, producing all of this technology. Let's start talking a little bit real quick, Tim, about what it is that got you involved with the Tesla Science Foundation and a little bit about what they're all about.
Sure. Well, you know, my background really is in film. You know, in film school, I did a movie on Nostradamus, and just to really backfill a bit, I was sitting after we did the sound mix for the movie, reading a magazine, and I came across this article on Nikola Tesla, who I'd never heard of. You know, when you're 24 or so, and you think you've gone to college, and all of a sudden this thing pops in on a guy that has been so prolific, it sort of boggles your mind. So, long story, I'm at a conference in Colorado Springs where I met the walking Tesla encyclopedia, Mark Cipher, who's PhD became his book, Wizard, the Life and Times of Nikola Tesla. And he was involved hand in glove with William Turbo, the great nephew, since passed away, unfortunately, of Nikola Tesla, who wrote the foreword for his book, and I got basically introduced to a lot of people on the East Coast primarily who have various Tesla Science Foundations and efforts. The Tesla Science Center on Wardenclyffe now that has received funding and is up and getting going. So it's important, I think, when you're in the media business to have as much of a broad sense of the dynamic of the players. So I spoke twice at New York City at the New Yorker Hotel on various topics about Tesla. And the fundamental thing is the Tesla Science Foundation itself is based out of Philadelphia, where Tesla spoke at the Franklin Institute in 1893. So there's a whole sort of raft of interconnected fibers and connectivity of topicality and people doing different things in different places. So I just sort of try and float and see where I can, you know, touch base with people and try and develop opportunities.
And that's why I love the title of board member at large, because literally it is your job to just get out there in the thick of it, to mix, mingle, talk to people, to get these ideas and concepts out there. And it's so great that there are people like you literally out there as ambassadors to the message and mission of Nikola Tesla. As he himself said, this power can be had. It's out there. It's free. It costs almost nothing to harness it and get it. And to even know the companies that are out there right now actively reverse engineering and working on some of his patents, things like that. It's pretty phenomenal.
Well, I'm always reminded, I was mentioning, I have a friend in Toronto with your last name, Jordan, and he's a big Leonard Cohen fan. He sent me a picture just before Leonard passed a while back. And Leonard Cohen's famous for the line, I'm paraphrasing, I think, it's through the cracks that the light gets in. Mm. And Tesla was sort of a crack in the system. He was a rebel, inconvenient genius who was bucking the system. He was trying to use what he knew, but to advance, very much like Elon Musk. I'm not saying that there's a correspondence exactly, but people who are breaking the mold, but using the system to better itself. It's kind of a hard dynamic to play that game, obviously.
Well, yeah, precisely. And one of the things that we were talking about pre-show was quite literally the concept that separated Edison and Tesla. So really it was the deep rift, was that Edison was nothing but business. If he saw a means by which to patent something and make a nickel off of it, buddy, he did it. And he made 18 versions of it.
There is an interesting PBS show. I approached PBS years ago and they thought Tesla was too obscure to do a show on, but they did it on their show, Masters, Great Masters, or some other title. But they did bring up, I think, quite, or maybe they did one on Edison. Edison was not about to let someone steal the limelight, okay?
No.
You have to actually realize that Tesla grew up as a bit of a ruffian. He actually had a job, as I recall, working on railways, doing like small newspapers at events. And it was very, you know, rough and tumble. So he was used to having to, you know, very much a survivor from that early experience, I think. But not to get too far into it, I'll just mention, when you're talking about an ambassador, there's a good Facebook group called Tesla's Ambassadors. They post some pretty quality things.
Okay.
But just as an example of the way I sort of float is, I was at the New York conference about 3 years ago, and they'd raised the money for the lab on New York, Wardenclyffe. And I was introduced to a woman who'd been tasked by Google. She was an employee. She was a Serbian lady, Anna. And she'd been sent to find touch points, because when they were raising the funding for the lab on Wardenclyffe, the email chain about that topic was the longest email chain in employee history at Google. So they thought there must be something there that merited, you know, we should look into. And I actually spoke at the Google Flex a couple of years ago, about Tesla, and there was 50 or 60 people there. So there are the Google and Tesla and the high tech Silicon Valley are really a match made in heaven, you know, because you've got uber geek cred with Tesla. Mm.
Yeah, and you know, one of my favorite quotes, literally of all time, is Nikola Tesla. They may have today, but the future belongs to me. And like I said, just the fact that so much of his technology is just now coming into use, and a lot of it, like we were saying pre-show, is because the material science is just now coming about to be able to create some of the things that are in his documentation and actively be able to test them and do stuff with them.
When I was at the Tesla Museum in Belgrade on the show that Mark Cipher and I were engaged with, I was really, you know, you have to realize the tolerance of the equipment, the finesse that was involved, and not a cheap proposition to have a glass blower on hand, you know,
yeah,
to grate vacuum tubes and then, you know, metallurgy. I mean, the confluence of technology in his time, he was the bleeding edge of, you know, not only producing machinery, like Einstein had a lot of thought experiments, Tesla would do a thought experiment and actually manifest it as a device. So I think that highly interesting, you know, divergence of the fruition of what they accomplished in real terms is Tesla's, you know, proof is in the pudding that he actually built things.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. There's one thing to coming up with an equation on a page. There's another thing to having that equation and going, okay, now let's make the machinery to make the machine.
That is really where the rubber hits the road. I mean, in actual fact, you have to realize that Tesla was prototyping the future with a lot of his techniques. I was just reading about, you know, turbines and generators and steam boilers and efficiency and, you know, the cost. Yeah, the thermodynamic coefficient, you know, the decrease in cost per output is just like the same as the Moore's law for computing power. The energy efficiency of devices that they were harnessing just you know, blew the roof off of expectations.
Yeah, precisely. And it just to give some listeners, some folks out there, a modern day equivalent in story and scope. Imagine Nikola Tesla being Steve Jobs and Wozniak in a garage, and Thomas Edison being IBM with a fully funded lab and like hundreds of technicians writing patents upon patents every single day. Cause it wasn't just Thomas Edison that was sitting there with a sketchbook, and coming up with stuff. Like, he had an entire lab of technicians and engineers that were there inventing things, working on things.
I read some tidbit just recently that the fellow who actually built the phonograph was paid $6.86 for his work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Edison, I think, came up with the idea of transcribing the mechanism with the oscillations being, you know, indented.
Yep.
But, you know, he had to pay someone to build it. I mean, he obviously had a staff of different people for the different component parts to be, you know, cast and produced. The interesting thing is Tesla was a scrappy rebel. You know, he saw something and he didn't, you know, give up on it. The idea that he had came to him in a vision in the park in Budapest, I believe. Was, you know, he said like a flash of lightning, the thing he'd been thinking about for 8 years suddenly had clarity. So it wasn't like it was easy. It was like he almost fried his brain coming up with this, you know, polyphase asynchronous generation. He invented an invisible wheel of energy.
Quite literally. And just to give, I do have a short clip here, just to give everybody an idea. There is a great video. If you go out and hop over to YouTube, folks. You can check out the Tesla TV. Tesla Talk TV is what you want to go to right here. Tesla Talk, that is the official channel. And they have a great 3D walkthrough of Wardenclyffe, things like that. And inside of there is a short little audio clip that explains a Tesla coil. And I want everybody to kind of hop in a Wayback Machine in their mind real quick and imagine the day and age. Imagine the fact that, like, electric lights had just started being used. They were not everywhere. It wasn't just walk in and hit a switch the way it is nowadays in every house in America. Yet still, the description of the technology you're about to hear is what this guy came up with.
The Tesla coil is an air cored resonant transformer, which takes its electricity from a regular outlet at 120 volts, which is passed through a high voltage transformer where the voltage is increased to 20,000 volts. As the stepped up voltage leaves the transformer, the power supply connection follows its path into the capacitors, where the stored energy in the capacitor increases. Voltage builds up in the capacitors until it reaches a level where the air between the spark gap is breached and the electrical energy is transferred to the primary coil. The current discharged from the capacitors oscillates back and forth into the primary coil. The electrical current radiates out electromagnetic waves that get inductively transferred into the secondary coil. The close proximity of the primary and secondary coil give rise to a magnetic coupling, and the two coils at the same resonant frequency generate an extremely high voltage in the secondary coil. As the voltage in the secondary coil increases to as much as 200,000 or more volts, the toroid is unable to prevent its breakout, and sparks are transferred into the air.
And that's how a Tesla coil works. If you're watching on Facebook, we have a Eye of the Storm ball that you used to be able to get your local Radio Shack, novelty shop, things like that. That is like a tiny little Tesla coil. And like I said, what's amazing is this guy invented this and came up with this concept when electricity was barely everywhere. It was still in its infant stages as far as a technology goes. And the fact that this was something that he had in a literal aha moment, where it was just like, oh, that's how that's done. I've been thinking about that, is absolutely mind-boggling.
I think it's good to sort of tie into that then. The thing that he devised called the Egg of Columbus, which was a rotating brass or copper egg that was energized on a circular platform. And that allowed people to actually see a manifestation of the current of action. It's quite an ingenious, you know, device they came up with.
Wow. Wow.
And I'm sure you're familiar.
Yeah. And, you know, you can buy, I guess, similar kits now that kind of show you the actual current field and things like that. There's all kinds of fun kits that you can get online. Like I said, I just finally took the leap myself and was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to get a Tesla coil and start playing around with some things. Start having some fun. Tesla coils are highly dangerous, folks. And unless you know stuff about electricity, don't be going out and getting anything beyond like an Eye of the Storm ball at your local novelty shop. Seriously, you can hurt yourself.
Only try it at home if you have considerable expertise.
That is correct. Like I said, I am a circuit designer. I play with high amp amplifiers, things like that all day. Yeah, it's definitely something to not play with because it is huge, high current. Yet at the same time, one of the things that gave him the name, the Wizard of Electricity, was the displays that he would put on for reporters, things like that. They were astounding displays, is the only way you can put it. Even by today's standards, whenever you look at the amount of power that was actively going on, millions of arc volts and to...
Well, that is an interesting aspect of his history, with he putting on these dynamic shows at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Excuse me, for instance. He actually performed, I think, at St. Louis at an electrical convention, and the demand for his appearance was so large that they had to switch from a 500 to a 5,000 seat auditorium in St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah. And to know that it actively became a tug of war technologically between and a full-on smear campaign between Edison and Tesla. He went as far as to Thomas Edison did went as far as to show public demonstrations electrocuting elephants with the power, all kinds of stuff. And it kind of backfired because all people saw was Thomas Edison electrocutes elephants, you know, headlines. so, but
there's a lot of ins and outs involved there, but the general thing
yeah.
was that he was trying to discredit, Tesla by, falsely misattributing the safety issue. But, the proof was in the pudding, and the beauty of the Tesla story to a certain extent is that he had at some point told an uncle of his when he saw a picture of Niagara Falls that he would go to America and put a big wheel under the falls. And, in 1894 or so, I believe.
Yeah.
I might be wrong on the date offhand. But, he was working with the titans of industry and finance, Morgan, Westinghouse, Astor, other names losing me at the moment, but fundamentally he was the creme de la creme, and he didn't even bother to go when they turned it on because he believed it would work, and it did. So that shows a little bit of confidence in your own ability.
Yeah, precisely. And on air right now, I'm kind of scrolling through, like I said, this 500-page tome of Nikola Tesla's inventions and patents. And yeah, like right here is the regulator for dynamo electric machines. That's a hand crank generator. That is what became what they used inside of dams, things like that. So
it's quite an astounding, as my partner, my screenwriting partner, Mark Seifer, the author of Wizard, The Life and Times of, the thing about Tesla's story is that it's so large. Like Lawrence of Arabia, you think about that movie or that time. It was an era that he was involved in the World War and the campaign. But, that was a short amount of time. Tesla spans a good 40 years of inventive, expertise and experience and different things that he did that people don't really even consider off the top of their head. More than invention was a visionary type of path that he was on. The problem of increasing human energy that he wrote in 1900 is really a pretty diverse overview of the issues that are involved in maintaining, a coherent, survivable civilization. Human energy is what keeps, us humming. So he was prescient and concerned. So one of the things, certain people in the Tesla community, see him as a saint, which in certain sense, I suppose, is entirely valid because he was, the son of a priest. So beyond just being an inventor, he was a philosophical savant.
Most definitely. He had a great interest. Even one of his other quotes was that he had heard voices from beyond come through one of his antennas. And in the latter part of his life, much like Edison, oddly enough, spent quite a bit of time working on devices to do just that. And it was really interesting to see, if you start looking at both of their lives later on, how both of them kind of went down that spiritualism path. Which was, of course, highly popular at the time, and gaining in popularity, but Edison himself made numerous devices that were intended to speak to the dead. Nikola Tesla focused more on antennas to receive messages and things like that. And of course, nowadays you're seeing more and more of the diagrams online for his free energy devices. Basically different forms of rectifiers, things like that, that when attached to antennas and capacitors will help gather this, like he spoke of, cosmic energy. The ionization that is literally floating around in the air constantly, even just the movement of particles itself, creates a static electric charge in the air.
Well, the one quote that I find, you know, very poetic, that he said that we're whirling through endless space at an incredible velocity. I'm sitting in my backyard, everything's nice, evening, a little breeze, but, you know, we're on a planet that's rotating and orbiting, and the whole solar system is moving, you know, and he saw the larger picture from micro to macro, from the electric to the cosmic. So that's kind of a large swath of territory for one guy to be working on.
Well, yeah, but it was very interesting, though, because like you said, he had a very philosophic view about things. He had a very philosophic view about business and about what should be done with his inventions. He was very, very careful in working with Westinghouse and trying to make him understand, listen, we need to build this, we need to figure it out, but you can't be charging everybody for it. That's not what this is about. which of course for someone like Westinghouse is like, well, then why am I giving you money? I'm giving you money so that we can charge money for this. And so,
well, the fundamental thing is Tesla had more of a karmic expectation that his good works would be suitably rewarded and respected. He wasn't, you know, out as a monetary proposition per se. Obviously, he had expenses to cover, you know, these people that he had working for him and doing different tasks. But it wasn't that he wasn't a bad businessman. He was an artist.
Yeah.
There was actually a very interesting program that IBM did with Watson, and they claim to have ingested all of his writings, and I'm not sure what they selected, but they said he scored 93% of an inclination as being an artist at heart. So when you think about electricity, you don't really think of the electrical arts, which is what they called it at the time, but the devices themselves are pieces of art.
Yeah. No, and that's just it. It is very much an art. Even whenever you go and start looking at schematics themselves, the way that they're laid out, it is an art form to get all those things in one place, to manage the way that they fit together, to manage the way that they work together, and the harmony and unity in which they work.
Getting back to what you think we were talking about, I think we're talking about Steve Jobs and Wozniak, and obviously Woz was a master of circuit optimization. That was the, you know, you've got IBM and they've got a huge infrastructure and a capability, but they've got some fellow like Woz who's just, you know, so deeply into it that he sees past the objections and goes for the objective.
Yeah, precisely. And it's a point of obsession, quite literally. To doggedly chase after things, until you find the answer, until you figure it out, until you have that little aha moment in a park that goes, hey, so yeah, that's how I harness that power and do that. Kind of like Doc Brown slipping off the toilet and coming up with the flux capacitor, the confluence of things happens. And to know that Nikola Tesla was as passionate about his research as he was, and earlier before the show, we were talking about, and just a minute ago, you were talking about the bringing up of distance, and even the fact that Nikola Tesla had worked with wireless technology before he worked with wireless power, and trying to create wireless power, he came up with a remote control model boat, all kinds of things. But to know that, like we were saying before the show, a lot of his concepts that he was working on were unable to be accomplished because of the material science of the day.
Well, to sort of put a pin on that, the annihilation of distance he was referring to was his idea of creating, you know, universal enlightenment for peace. I mean, he grew up in a very militaristic frontier, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Turks, and, you know, a history of conflict and wars, and actually evaded being drafted into the military and went, you know, posed as a hunter up in the mountains for several, maybe even a year or two, I think, at some point. So he saw, you know, villages that had been pillaged in various skirmishes, and he was very, you know, abhorrent. He saw war and destruction as being, you know, evil, frankly, I suppose. And so what he was really trying to do was create harmony in the world by communication. So annihilating distance, like I'm speaking to you right now instantaneously for practical effect, is really how he was hoping to create universal enlightenment and harmony between people by being able to speak and understand and share, you know. So it verges on the philosophical, religious, you know, depth of, he was on a mission from God to a certain extent, to borrow from the Blues Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And when that is how you consider yourself, it's hard not to be taken away and be carried away with your work, and to be as passionate as he was, and as solitary.
Well, when you're someone like that, then it's easy for them to label you something as a crazy crackpot mad scientist.
Oh yeah,
because you're not conforming to the ideals of the business corporate, you know, proposition. That everything is nickels and dimes and profit and loss. You know, getting back to what I think I said earlier, before the show, was Tesla was working in the model of having a patron. And you may or may not know that John Jacob Astor actually wrote a science fiction type novel called Journey Beyond Planets, or something to that effect. So there was a kindred spirit insofar as they were both cosmically inclined that there might be intelligence life in this huge universe.
Yep.
That we weren't that special, that, you know, life beyond our small little speck, the pale blue dot that Carl Sagan refers to, is probably a high probability, but, you know, distance and communication. That's what the annihilation of distance refers to, is, you know, until we can really have something. I don't know how much of a science fiction person you are, but in
huge
science fiction, there's a device called the Ansible, which is a superluminal, you know, instantaneous, or if you saw the show, The Expanse on Amazon, I believe, I always go, well, how do they, you know, communicate so quickly? So I assume at a certain point they have instantaneous communication in that story. But what he was trying to do was really break the barriers of everything that he was involved with.
Yeah, absolutely. And the, like you said, getting to get rid of distance, to make those things, one of the big data dumps that on our knowledge vault, everybody, is where you can find this 500-page document. But if you go to dudesandbeer.com/knowledge, we will be having in the scientific documents and studies section a whole bunch of new data coming in that will be up literally about warp drive technology. And some of these are papers that were written like back in the 90s. And it's pretty phenomenal. One of the writers and authors of a couple of the papers has actually become my connection. So We are slowly approaching him right now to come on the show and do the same thing that you're doing right now, kind of share this information that a lot of people may not be aware of. And to know that people like Nikola Tesla were theorizing about this 100 years ago is pretty...
It was pretty out there. So, you know, the fundamental proposition at the end of the day is just to sort of wrap up backwards a bit.
Yep.
As I said, when I first got involved and affiliated myself with Mark Cipher, who wrote the definitive Tesla biography, is that even on a daily basis, both he and myself, you know, continue to find little nuggets of, you know, data points that feed into, and currently his new book coming up early next spring, Wizard at War, talks about the whole dynamic of his quest to create a energy field, the teleforce, which would make, you know, defense supreme over attack, and be able to defend countries from larger countries by having this defensive shield. So it gets into the whole thing where people talk about the death ray and that type of more hyperbolic, you know, interpretation. But his entire, you know, methodology was really tilted towards protection as opposed to offensive. And we were talking about Nobel, who created dynamite and thought that it would be too hideous to be used for warfare. And, you know, the problem is when you get to the real world, the philosophical, you know, impetus is often, you know, perverted, unfortunately.
Yeah, precisely. Because there is this beautiful intent by the makers of like, man, you know, look at this and the lesson that we'll be able to learn. And unfortunately, the maniacal mind takes it 180 degrees and goes, oh, well, man, yeah, that is a perfect idea. Look at that. Because
there's actually a group, an initiative. I don't know if it's really with the military, but I saw they're posting on LinkedIn. It's called the Mad Scientist Initiative. And they were asking people to give them visions of military combat and battle space dominance. You know, this is absolutely bath backwards. You know, why do we need to keep promulgating that destructive motif? Why aren't we working on, you know, the same scientist initiative? But that's just me.
Yeah, no, precisely. And that's something that you really have to ask yourself, because I myself live here in Austin, Texas, and they announced all of a couple years ago. I sat right here and watched at home on Facebook when they announced the Future Warfare Division, that they were actively bringing 100-plus military personnel and contractors to embed them with graduate-level students who were working in new fields of technology. And it's like, you just like straight up said that on Facebook, like public address. Oh. You ain't even hiding it. Like we're going to send all these good guys over here and, you know, make sure that we can take advantage of all these great ideas that these kids are coming up with.
Unfortunately, the fact of the matter is war has more toys.
Oh yeah. They got great toys. Well, and, you know, as even myself as a live AV engineer doing the high-end corporate events that I get to go to, I work a few intelligence events. I work some major product releases by, like, people that build servers and things like that, and AI machinery and quantum computing. And when you start hearing, like, the head of Boeing's engineering program and somebody from NASA talking about the fact that in the next couple of years, Moore's law may just collapse. The rate of processing is happening so fast and the technology is being developed so fast that right now it may just collapse. And we have no idea what the next process beyond quantum is. Right now we're still trying to figure out that quantum element. And to know that Nikola Tesla was around at the time when, man, people were still writing science fiction stories about maybe we will go to the moon one day. Like, maybe one day we'll go up out there.
I do love the first man on the moon with the anti-gravity device that they used for their capsules shielding, anti-gravity shielding, I think that was something we should have soon, I hope.
Yeah, no, precisely. I mean, that is one of the documents that I have talks about creation of an artificial gravitational field for space vehicles, things like that. It's just mind-boggling, the things that are out there, the stuff that is out there right now as we speak, that the average person just going about their business in the day, if you aren't spending time digging and widening rabbit holes yourself, you may not miss it. Or you may miss it, rather.
Well, there's a very wide and deep amount of things going on. I just try to sort of stay a little bit focused on the thematic approach, you know, and fundamentally we do have projects, you know. One of my personal favorite things would be do the musical theater project that we've developed. I have a partner up in Toronto, and so we've written the actual Jesus Christ, you know, superstar level production, but you know, there's not a lot of live opportunity at the moment for that proposition.
Yeah, but it is really cool what you guys have done, to see the fact that y'all brought that to Broadway, everything else. And even to know now that there are movies like The Current War, things like that, that have come out. There's definitely been a raising and heightening of awareness. I think, of course, people starting businesses, multi-million-dollar businesses with the name Tesla attached to them, kind of makes some people go, oh, well, where'd that come from? So I think that kind of started some of the revolution of the reawakening to Tesla in the public eye.
No doubt. One of the things that's most incredible to me is to realize that the Tesla Motors has never spent any money on advertising.
Yep.
That all of their awareness has basically been organic and, you know, fan-created promos. There's a very numerous people that type of project. The thing that embodies to me is the fact that this is still essentially an inconvenient genius rebel with a cause kind of story. Even though Tesla is now worth the combined value of six other automakers, it's still a fringe, semi-mainstream, you know, awareness. What is the connection really? You know, the deep level understanding is really where the value add is.
Yep.
In terms of the legacy that you're speaking about.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about Tesla, the company, is literally the fact that they open their patents up. If you want to build on a Tesla patent, contact Tesla. They'll give it to you. Like, they're not.
I think that was at a certain point they might have superseded some of that technologies, you know, a bit, you know, passe at this point. But, you know, the gesture was obviously, you know, in the spirit of what Tesla had intended.
Exactly.
You know, open sourcing to that degree.
Yeah, precisely. Precisely.
You know, the fundamental thing is that Tesla did have patents and he was hoping to be able to monetize further research from, you know, flow through deal flow that would support his next endeavors. But I think if anyone who spends some time and goes into the sessions that he had, some legal wrangling, and he actually gave depositions describing what he was doing, why he was doing it. The fact of the matter is he became entangled in the system that he was trying to, you know, supersede. So he was bogged down in a lot of legal and business things that, you know, distracted him from being fully engaged on the creative endeavors he was hoping to accomplish. So people say he was a bad businessman. You're a bad businessman if you're getting kneecapped by J.P. Morgan. So
yeah,
there's that, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like he was swimming in a pool of good-hearted colleagues. There was people out to, you know, knife him if they could. There was nothing, there was no holds barred, especially as we talked earlier with Edison, would not allow anyone else to steal a limelight from his, you know, his endeavors if he could manage it.
Yeah, precisely. It's not like he was dealing with, you know, like mom and pop's coil winding on Third Street. You know, he was going up literally against the giants of industry, and had kind of, with a few of them, with his passionate self, kind of estranged himself from them and from their good graces. You know.
Well, I think George Westinghouse and him were probably the closest of, you know, actual, you know, practical accomplishments. But the fundamental thing was what happens with someone like George Westinghouse. He loses control of the corporation, and he's kept on, as it turned out, as a figurehead without actual, you know, decision-making capacity. That he's been usurped from being able to. The amazing story of Tesla ripping up a royalty contract that he had with Westinghouse to help them stay in business was, you know, something where, if you think about it, if Tesla had not ripped up the contract, there wouldn't have been a Westinghouse for him to hopefully go back to. So he was doing it to a certain extent on his future own benefit. But the fundamental thing is that George Westinghouse and him had, at the time of their, you know, success at the Columbian Exposition in Niagara Falls, they had what was called the perfect partnership of the visionary and the entrepreneurial commercial person who was supportive of Tesla's. It was called the Westinghouse Tesla system, you know, under George Westinghouse until, you know, later on that disappeared. But they did have, I think, probably the perfect relationship of vision and commercialization.
Yeah, he did.
For a period of time.
He did definitely have a good partner with Westinghouse. He had finally found somebody who at least understood what he was trying to do in principle.
Well, because Westinghouse was actually an inventor of the air brake, which, you know, basically made his name. And so he had come up through the same sort of grueling process that Tesla was involved in is commercializing and being in business. Tesla actually had companies and owned stock and was given stock and to that effect. He was in business. He was just, unfortunately, didn't have like a Steve Jobs for the, you know, he was trying to do, he's a one man band. You can't do it all. He didn't have, you know, the wingman that most people like Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, you know, Westinghouse and Tesla didn't continue as long as it possibly could have for that longer term, you know, advantageous outcome.
Well, and that's just it. At some point, it becomes, like I was saying, the fact of you've got Tesla, who is the designer and the manufacturer and the innovator, and at the same time, you've got Edison across the country, who has an entire factory of people like Nikola Tesla at his disposal and goes, hey, we need to make this. Get on it, guys, and walks out of the room.
Well, you know, Edison did have ideas.
He had quite a few.
He was a very creative person. But, you know, his methodology was trying 1,000 things until one stuck.
Yeah.
And Tesla's thing was figure it out and then make it, and it'll work right from the get-go. So they had an entirely contrarian viewpoint about the methodology of how to accomplish something, which is, I think Edison said, I've tried 10,000 ways until I found one, or to that effect, paraphrasing.
Yeah.
And Tesla said that if Edison had a needle to find in a haystack, he would proceed with the diligence of a bee, but not try and figure out, well, maybe if I use a magnet, I could, you know, attract the metallic
Yeah, exactly.
Artist access.
Well,
figure out a way of doing it more efficiently. Just don't do it. But brute force is often, you know, what works, but is it really the best way that you could do it if you had the opportunity to do it more elegantly?
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, there's 100 ways to get around the wall or go through the wall. Do you have to bang your head against it to get through it? and just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And that was definitely a big part of, like you were saying, the methodology of Edison, you know, the fact of, I found 2,000 ways not to make a light bulb.
Yeah.
You know,
that's not something to brag about, frankly, but
not really.
I think, you know, the thing that I've always come back to is the fact that after Tesla left working with Edison, he was reduced to a job as a manual laborer digging ditches.
Yeah.
And, you know, ditches for the Edison power lines. So perhaps there are other, you know, endeavors. But the fact that he was grounded, he wasn't, you know, a highfalutin, you know, ivory tower theoretician. He actually paid his dues and came out on top. At a certain point, he was proclaimed the new wizard of the West.
Precisely, and that is the Tesla that we know today. And there's a whole world of conspiracy that comes in the later end of Tesla's life, like you were saying. Many of the contracts he picked up and were trying to get were government contracts. They became through the War Department, things like that. Of course, the infamous death ray that everybody wants to talk about, and which was really more of a force field that became altered in its own way in order to fit the needs of the client, so to speak.
Well, there was an energy projector,
sure.
But I find it interesting. He had the energy projector as sort of a militaristic thing, but I really loved his concept of the thought projector, where he would, you know, scan your retina and your thoughts would be, you know, derived from an interface with your eye, which is pretty far out there. But, you know, Elon Musk is working on the neural link to, you know, be able to think your thoughts and express your thoughts into some type of interface. So even in that score, Tesla was thinking outside the box, or you know, thought projection isn't exactly something you think about first when you think of his legacy, but he was out there doing that, kind of intrinsically interesting, I suppose.
Yeah, precisely. There was nothing that when it crossed his mind to say, hey, what if that's possible? He literally explored the possibility deeply, if it was something that struck his fancy to consider.
You might, if you have a chance to get Mark Spicer on.
I'd love
to. He's actually been working with some people who have developed and the medical therapeutic area is an area of my expertise. But after Tesla left Edison, he actually started the Tesla Ozone Company.
Yep.
Because he'd had some near-death experiences with cholera, and he wanted to create a medical ozone treatment that would kill bacteria and viruses. And there are people with this current pandemic talking about some type of ozone therapy that might be efficacious. But that's a little bit outside of my area of expertise to discuss. But Mark pretty enthused that there might still something be the legacy of Tesla, you know, that could be brought to bear with that type of ozonic therapeutic. If it worked out to be, you know, a ground game there, that might be interesting for you to know about.
Yeah, no, most definitely. And, you know, like for my Talking Sound podcast this year, I actually had a chance to go with the Tech Podcast Network and Plug Hits Live, things like that, and go over and cover CES. And whenever coronavirus happened, all of us were texting back and forth like, oh, my God, you remember that company from CES that had like the personal air purifier? Like, it was literally this little mask that went, it was an acrylic mask like a necklace that you wore around and came up around your face and put a slight electric charge and UV light right there by your face, and it basically anesthetized all the air coming into you. And it was like, the stuff is out there. People are actively working in this field, in this realm, like ionizing personal air to do this stuff. And it all has its roots right there with Tesla. And even to know that upon his death, when he died, that oddly enough, it was like U.S. Customs. It was like the Customs Department that came in and took all of his documentation and everything.
Mark has a letter from one of the people who was assigned from the Office of Alien Property, who went to his room.
With
military people.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that is a huge sort of Megilla of a story about the number of trunks that were, you know, there's various numbers of trunks that were found and or seized and or, you know, then forwarded to the museum in Belgrade. You know, 20 or 30 may or may not be missing, depending on the container count. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like the end of Indiana Jones. It's a huge warehouse with all this stuff of various value or just archives that's even beyond the scope of being able to catalog, I suppose.
Yeah, being examined by top men. Top men.
There's many stories that emanate from that. You can have Mark speak to it.
Exactly. I mean, it's out there, and it is one of those strange cases, and it is not even a case of conspiracy theory, folk. It is a case of fact that descendant of Donald Trump was actively involved in that raid. It's just strange the way that the tendrils of history happen. Not saying there was anything nefarious there. Not saying that Trump family fortune came from, you know, Nikola Tesla invention patents. None of that stuff, folks. That is not what we ascribe to here. We are a fact-based show. But it is interesting to know that this thing actually happened. Whenever people are like, oh, it's a conspiracy theory that they came and stole Nikola Tesla's stuff. No, they did. They actively came and took it all. And like, imagine if your grandfather was like out in the garage every day tinkering around, and upon his death, the government just came and said, hey, we need to take your garage with us.
Well, there were no military implications that, you know, Tesla was in the New York Times talking about his
death rays and
regard and contacting foreign governments, trying to, you know, to get some business going in that area. So I'm not sure what else I can get to the table at this point. Is there something you needed to add on to that I could help you with?
No. I just thank you so much for taking the time tonight to come on to talk about your involvement with the Tesla Science Foundation. Where can people go to find out more about that? Where can they go to keep up with the latest that's going on? Where can they go to get involved?
Well, it's pretty easy to find, the TeslaScienceFoundation.org. I'm not sure the exact web address off the top of my head. I'm sure that will point you to it. As I said, there's several legacy. The New York Tesla Society is more the early originators back in the 60s, probably 70s. The most active group is the Tesla Science Center at Wardenclyffe on Long Island, that are developing that museum and interactive public education endeavors and many things. They just had a recent competition where people are youngsters, I'm not sure, 12 to 18, 6 to 18, age group, I'm not sure, but they were asked to do a Lego challenge for a considerable prize, and I think there's maybe 100 different Lego versions of his lab or of Tesla that are on their website, the Tesla Science Center, for judging. So if you go there, there's a page, a splash page, which talks about that. I think they've curtailed that we're going to have tours and more, you know, hands-on live events. I know they have a birthday celebration every year in the summer, in July. And if you're on the East Coast, you can travel there at some point when it's more active than it might be now. But as I said, the Tesla Science Foundation's in Philadelphia, and they have quite a few things on a monthly basis of the Franklin Institute, where, as I said to you earlier, Tesla actually spoke in 1893.
Yep.
And so the East Coast is really more the hotbed out here in California, where he never came to. It's not like there's a big historical basis for activities, but I just try to keep my ear to the ground on any connections out here that fold into what's going on back east.
Tim, once again, thank you so much for coming on, for sharing all of your knowledge about Nikola Tesla, your passion about the topic, how you got involved with this science foundation, and your work with it. Good luck to everything that you guys are doing. We will make sure to put up links on our website. We have already gone through and added the work of Mark Cipher to our Dudes and Beer store there, so you can go and check this stuff out on Kindle. He's got some great Kindle versions out there. You can get it in hardback, paperback, all that kind of good stuff. Tim, thank you so much for the time this evening, for the time over the last week, just kind of chatting back and forth between the two of us. Greatly appreciate it. Please do hold the line while we close things out real quick with the audience. Make sure to stop on by dudesandbeer.com. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find the Knowledge Vault, where you can get the patents of Nikola Tesla, 500-page document there. We will soon be having some documents up on warp drive technology and be talking with Mike Turber about that. In addition, everyone, make sure to stop on by HC Universal Network. That is our parent network. That is where you can find all the episodes. And while you're online, getting your copy of Wizard, The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla at Amazon from the Dudes and Beer store, make sure to stop on by audibletrial.com/dudesandbeer. Get your 30-day free trial, everybody. Grow your brain during this COVID time. We'll talk to you soon. Take care of yourselves. Thanks. Take care of each other. You can't be good. Be good at it. Bye-bye.
To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.